Between the Lines with Andrea Gilligan. This is News Talk.
Well, a very good morning and you're welcome along to News Talk's Between the Lines programme with myself, Andrea Gilligan, where we'll be taking a closer look at some of the main stories and issues of interest. You can listen back to our podcast on newstalk.com on last week's programme regarding children's health and obesity. And as always, you can get in contact with us today by emailing betweenthelines@newstalk.com or on Twitter at myself at Andrea Gilligan. Well, coming up on the programme, we'll be discussing the issue of homelessness. We'll be asking, is there any way to reduce the number of people experiencing homelessness in Ireland today? We'll also be looking at ways to reduce the number of homeless people on our streets and in emergency accommodation. Now, we'll be joined shortly by some of those who are involved in the area and what they're also doing to try and deal with those who are homeless. But just to start off, first of all, this morning, we're joined by Paul Melia, Environment Editor with the Irish Independent. Paul, a very good morning.
Morning.
Just first of all, just paint the picture for us. What are the figures?
The figures as of now are there is almost 10,000 people in long-term homelessness. 9,681 is the figure. Of those, there's about 3,650 children, 1,700 families. It's probably worth just looking back to January 2017, just over a year ago. The figures there stood at 7,167. So in that period, they've gone up by 2,700 or so.
And those figures, just tell us where they're from, because there's some disparity in terms of the different figures and where they come from. And we've a whole host of different sets of figures. So where are these from?
OK, these figures come from the Department of Housing. And what they're based on is what they call Section 10 funding. So in other words, they're people in some form of emergency accommodation funded by the state, by the Department of Housing. So really what's probably happening is there's far more than 10,000 people homeless, but they're just not being captured by the system.
So these are the people who are basically, they're engaging with the system.
Engaging with the system. They're in hostels, they're in B&Bs, they're in hotels, they're in some form of emergency accommodation funded by the state. They have no home to call their own. Now, where a discrepancy has arisen in recent weeks is that the Department of Housing has removed 600 people from those figures. And the reason they have done so is they say that there is 600 people who have their own accommodation, but what's happened is that they're being funded from this Section 10 funding. So in other words, they're in a rental accommodation, they have a landlord, they have, as the minister has said, their own front door and key. However, their house, their rent is being paid by from emergency accommodation funding. So what the minister said and the department said was those people have their own home, they should be removed from the homelessness figures. Now, what all the people around the table here will tell you is that those people are homeless because they don't have permanent accommodation. It's short-term lets. It could be for a month, for 2 months, while the local authority figures out what to do with them. So some of these people, for example, in Louth and Meath and that, they might not have access to B&Bs and hostels and so on that the local authorities in Dublin might have. So they're renting places on a short-term basis.
Okay.
So those people are homeless. The department says they're not, and that's where the discrepancy arises.
So what is the, I suppose, the objection, or what's wrong with that different classification of the figures? If people are currently getting some form or participating or engaging in the system, they do have a roof over their head right now. What is the issue with that?
Well, I mean, if you're in a B&B, technically you have a roof over your head, but it doesn't mean that you've got a sustainable long-term home. And that's the issue. In a lot of these cases, these people could be in a place for a month or for 2 months. They're waiting for something permanent, whether that be a local authority house, whether for a home to be rented on a long-term lease by the state for them. So they're living essentially, you know, week-to-week basis and trying to figure out what's going to happen to them. Now, the obvious upshot of that, or the difficulty with that is that if you have children, for example, where do you put them in school? Are you travelling to get your kids to school? Are you going to be moved somewhere else where you're going to have that difficulty as well? So they're not sustainable long-term homes, and that's the issue. And really, what the suggestion is politically is that the Housing Minister, Owen Murphy, doesn't want the figure to go officially above 10,000, because no minister wants to have 10,000 people in homeless accommodation on their watch.
So just in terms of the figures that you pointed out there that are from the Department of Housing, and you've indicated there's, for instance, a rise already in up to nearly 2,000 alone for this year, how is it that we can't seem to get a grasp of this situation? Like, we seem to be constantly putting, and members of the public will tell you that, this is an issue that we hear, we talk about, it's discussed on the news and current affairs shows, you know, day in, day out, certainly on a weekly basis. There's more and more money being, I suppose, put aside, sidelined and allocated to try and alleviate the problems here. But the problem seems to be getting worse.
Problem's getting worse for a number of reasons. I mean, everyone talks about supply, and supply is ultimately the issue. There isn't enough housing out there. There isn't enough housing being provided. There isn't enough new build. The government has committed to building 50,000 social housing units under its Rebuilding Ireland programme. Now, here are some interesting figures. There's 13,500 which are planned at some stage of the planning, the design, the construction process. Of those 13,500, 2,500 have been built in the last number of years by local authorities and approved housing bodies. Some local authorities, Wicklow and Laois, for example, have built no social housing units.
Why is that?
Why? Well, there's a number of reasons. A, they're not up to the job, obviously, because the units aren't being delivered. They would have lost a lot of capability during the downturn when they would have lost all of their expertise in-house. They're just slow. They're not getting the supports perhaps from the department. The department isn't onto them to say what's happening with all of these projects. In a lot of other local authorities, they've built fewer than 10. So it's not that just two are being singled out as being particularly bad. Of those 13,500, as I said, there's about 3,500, 3,600 in progress. In other words, at various stages of the planning or the design process. Lots of those are in the appeals, are in the system since 2013. So you have projects that went in 2013 saying, give us approval. The department said, okay. Then they have to go back and do some design and go back to the department for the second stage of approval. They haven't gone back. So we don't know why that is. But clearly there's a problem with the system whereby the capability isn't there. The political will isn't there. I think personally it's the civil service aren't chasing the local authorities enough and saying to them, if you're having a problem delivering your social housing, well, what do you need? Do you need engineers? Do you need architects? Do you need planners? Do you need people who are involved in procurement? Do you know people who know the market? And that doesn't seem to be happening, because if it was happening, the supply would be far greater than it currently is.
So even in terms of actually addressing this issue, this is basically a carbon copy replica of just what's happening in the private rental market, and that we don't have enough properties, and that's just simply the issue.
Well, that really is the issue. I mean, ultimately, I mean, the private sector has kind of other issues that it's going on with. I mean, there's an element of policy is changing quite a bit, so there's no certainty for developers, so they don't know what's going to happen in terms of, you know, they might go in for planning application to build six-storey apartment block, but then the provisions of the planning acts might change, whereby no longer do they have to provide car parking and things like this. So developers are waiting and holding a wait-and-see approach. Now, the minister talks an awful lot about supply is coming up, and it is. It is increasing. And he talks about planning permissions, he talks about commencement notices and all the rest. A thing to remember, I think, is that 2 years ago, there was more than 20,000 units in Dublin with planning permission. So there was never any shortage of units in the system ready to go, but they weren't being built. And the reason they weren't being built is because in many cases, developers were saying, why would I build now? Because prices are going to continue to rise. So why don't you just wait? Mm. You had landowners who waited. You have NAMA who even said that they sold land that isn't being developed.
But the funny thing is, when we're looking at the housing sector at the moment, and if you ever talk to developers, a lot of them will tell you that they want to engage with the likes of the local authorities and local authority developments because there is guaranteed money there for them.
There is, except a big problem for the developers. Well, two things is, lots of developers are building. So, you know, it's not the case that you can't make money out of building houses. You can. And we know this because there are people on site. The second thing is that a large part of this crisis is going to be solved not by schemes of 200 and 300 units where 10% are going to be for social housing. They're going to be pockets. They're going to be 6, 10, 15, 20 units here, there and everywhere in every local authority across the country. An awful lot of small builders that would deliver those kind of schemes can't get funding. They can't get access to finance. When they do, it's very expensive finance. The state is supposed to be helping out with this, but nothing really seems to have happened on that front. The banks are unwilling to lend for housing outside, really, of Dublin, Cork and Galway. We know this because the Department of Housing issued a report where they said this. And the department basically is saying, our social housing programme will deliver X amount. But the department has also admitted there's no affordable housing being built and developers aren't building it. So what you have is a whole cohort of people that earn modest enough kind of salaries, but they earn too much to get into social housing, but they don't earn enough to go out and buy a house that will cost 340,000, and they're caught in the middle.
Even with that new scheme, as you mentioned, the I think the cut-off point is somewhere in the region of around 50,000. So if you earn 52,000, you don't qualify, and all of a sudden you find yourself in this trap.
You're gone. This is the government's affordable mortgage. Yeah. But I mean, even that in itself is a nonsense. I mean, why is the government issuing mortgages to people? I mean, we rescued the banks. The banks should be lending to people who are in secure jobs. They may not earn ferocious amounts of money, but they have careers, they're raising families, and presumably the banks should be stepping in and giving those. If it's a longer term, perhaps on the loan, maybe that's something to be looked at. But we have this thing of kind of the banks are so risk adverse. after everything that happened before, the function of the banking system is to lend to SMEs, to people who want to buy their homes, and it's clearly not doing that.
Okay. Just Paul Melia, you mentioned at the outset there 9,681, that's what the most recent figures show in terms of the number of people who are homeless. They're the most urgent people who now require these houses that you're talking about.
Well, these are the people in emergency accommodation. Those are the mix of people who would have paid rent, where their landlord has sold the property, where they've been evicted, where they've fallen into arrears. There's people who would have long-term medical needs involved in that as well. There would be kind of the traditional kind of homeless, if you like, the people that would have been on the streets that have their own issues as well. So it's a mix of people. But that's not to say that, you know, that really is capturing everybody, as I said. I mean, the figures are probably well in excess of 10,000 because the system can't capture everybody. There's a lot of people with very profound difficulties that aren't engaging in the system. So they're probably out there as well. And really, I think what we're seeing is that despite lots and lots of government talk and government commitment and all the rest, it's not getting any better. And the reason we know it's not getting any better is because A, supply is not really way ahead of where it's not really where it should be. It should be more. And secondly, because these numbers keep rising. So they are the most vulnerable. But there's an awful lot of people paying an awful lot of money in rent who are barely keeping their heads above water. We've a lot of people in mortgage arrears. Chances are lots of those people are going to start coming into the system as banks start to sell those loans. So I think there's probably more to come.
Okay, just finally, Paul, for the moment, is there a simple solution to this?
Supply, that's it.
It's just as simple as that.
I think it's just build more. We need to build more. We need to be clever in how we build. We need to stop this nonsense of you know, constantly being in thrall of developers who say they can't make money from it because some are. We have an awful lot of publicly owned land. The department has identified 700 sites in our cities, particularly around Dublin. Why not use them? There's a suggestion that if the state starts using its own land and going to the market or tendering for people to build homes, that the private sector will take legal action against them. Look, let them. The market has clearly failed. Because if the market was working properly, we wouldn't have the housing and homeless crisis we currently have.
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. Paul Melia, Environment Editor with the Irish Independent. I want to turn to our panel now. We're joined in studio by Father Peter McFerry of the Peter McFerry Trust, John Mark McCafferty, CEO of Threshold, and also Mike Allen, Director of Advocacy at Focus Ireland. You're all very welcome to the programme this morning. We had a little bit of a scene setter there from Paul Melia, the Environment Editor with the Irish Independent, in terms of just painting the picture. To give us a kind of a, I suppose, an insight into just how real the problem actually is for so many people. He says there's 9,681 people currently in emergency accommodation, Father Peter McFerry. Just is that your view or is that figure higher?
That's the number using emergency accommodation. However, probably the number is about 15,000. That number doesn't include people who are sleeping rough. It doesn't include people sleeping in tents or in cars. It doesn't include probably many thousand who are sofa surfing, who won't go into emergency accommodation. It doesn't include 100 people who are in the Regina Chaley and the Morning Star hostels, which are not funded by the state. So there are a lot of, this is the number of people who are using emergency accommodation. It's not the number of homeless people. Number of homeless people is far, far higher than that.
Just for anybody listening this morning, and some people find it hard or difficult to kind of get their head around the fact that if somebody is in difficulty, they're looking for emergency accommodation, there is emergency accommodation options available to people, whether it be hostels, various different agencies, even hotels, etc. And people will wonder, why aren't they engaging? Why is there a disparity of around 6,000 people who don't or won't engage with that?
First of all, the system by which you access emergency accommodation is appalling. You have to ring a free phone number. You'll be told to ring back at 10:30 at night. And you may very well be told at 10:30 at night there's no beds left. Come and collect a sleeping bag. And if you have that experience for a few nights, you just give up. The second problem, and really a very, very important problem, is much of the emergency homeless accommodation is of such appalling quality that people don't want to go into it. Normally you'll be in a shared accommodation, you'll be sharing a room with maybe three or four or five or others. People will regularly complain about being assaulted in that accommodation. people will be using drugs in front of them in the middle of the night. They wake up in their morning and their belongings are have disappeared. So people just, many people are unwilling to access that sort of accommodation.
Okay.
And until we improve the quality of emergency accommodation, you're going to get a lot of people who simply, even if there was a bed available, to say, I'm sorry, I'm not taking that bed. I'm just too afraid to go into that sort of accommodation.
Just if you don't, I just wanted to turn to yourself, Mike Allen. One of the points that Peter McFerry mentioned there is the fact that there's often a case that there wouldn't be enough accommodation, emergency accommodation available to people on a given night. Why is that the case? So we not only do we not have enough emergency or enough housing and housing units for homeless people, but we don't seem to even have enough emergency accommodation for people.
It's because the problem is getting worse very, very quickly. So one of the main things the government has done, in fact, in response to the homeless crisis, is to build lots and lots of shelters. And while obviously that is better to have shelters and what Peter says about the quality of those shelters needs to be very clearly listened to, that's not the solution. So we need the energy going into building the homes and a response which was leading us to build up some massive infrastructure to manage homelessness. We, Focus Ireland, certainly do not think that solution. I think none of us sitting around the table wants to be sitting here talking about the numbers. We want to be talking about the solutions and we want to be talking about the human beings who are experiencing the problem. But since the minister wants us to have this discussion, I think it's possibly use it to sort of spread some understanding about the nature of homelessness. Homelessness is actually a very complicated thing. It's, you know, people maybe just think of the people on the street and so on, but it's actually a very complex issue for the people experiencing it. And it's not black and white. So there are lots of different definitions you might have of homelessness, which might include some people and not. And what you're talking about earlier about engaging with the system is part of it, but it's also who the state chooses to count as homeless. So, for instance, women who are fleeing domestic violence are in a domestic violence shelter are not counted within homeless as homeless within the system that we currently have, simply because the domestic violence system is funded by a different department than the Department of Housing. So it is very complicated, and over years, right across the world, people have had these discussions. And it's ultimately a bit pointless to end up in some deep philosophical discussion about what is, you know, who's homeless and who isn't homeless and exactly where the border lies, when you actually should be solving the problem. So what we did in Ireland is in 2014, the then minister brought together the homeless organisations, academics from Trinity and his own officials. And we agreed that the simple way of measuring homelessness was how many people were funded, who were living in emergency accommodation paid for by Section 10 of the Housing Act, as Peter and Paul just described earlier. Everybody agreed that that wasn't perfect. Everybody agreed that there were people left out of that. But everybody agreed that it would be much more useful to try and concentrate on the solutions than to concentrate on refining. Now, the minister, without coming back to any of the people who were consulted on the previous thing, has decided to enter an incredibly ill-informed, what he's calling a discussion about what is the nature of homelessness and whether you're homeless if you've got a key or a front door. These are the sorts of things that, if there was an undergraduate course on homelessness, would be covered in the very first session. And to have the minister and his officials trying to open up a public debate about these basic issues is either deeply depressing because they don't understand what they're talking about, or is deeply depressing because they're trying to distract attention from the real solutions,
homes. I suppose some people, though, would look at it, though, and say we need to have a database where there's just one set of figures. Because
we have agreed. No, it isn't. And this is what we must not do, is allow this thing that the department, some people in the department are trying to do, is to spread a sense that these figures are not accurate. The figures are measuring exactly what they are meant to measure. They measure the number of people that taxpayers are paying to keep in emergency homeless accommodation.
Okay.
That's what they're measuring. Now, the minister is trying to change that, and that will leave us with nothing clear.
Okay, but
is wider, but it is useful to have some very easily findable figure. So they're using an administrative figure. It's an important figure. It isn't the only figure, but let's stick to the one figure which is reliable and not muddy the waters and pretend that we don't know what's going on.
I just want to bring in John Mark McCafferty, the CEO of Threshold, because you are, I suppose, in the business of, we've been talking about emergency accommodation and ways now to try and deal with that. And how can we get people out of emergency accommodation and into more permanent homes? To me, the word emergency, it means it's stopgap. It needs to happen. You know, it's here and now. I need a bed tonight. So, but, you know, in the next month or two, I should be moving on to something else. Is that the case?
Yeah, I guess what we're about in Threshold is about prevention. And also in our services, it's about move on. But our key work is about advising people who are in the rented sector and assisting them to hold on to the homes that they live in and that they love. And our role in this debate is really to ensure that that figure doesn't get any bigger. That we're dealing with the causes of homelessness, and we witness, and I'm sure everyone around the table knows this, that the vast majority of people who are homeless have come from the private rented sector. There is an over-reliance by government and local authorities on the private rented sector. And while there have been improvements in the legislation and policies related to the private rented sector, it is far from ideal. And one of the key issues there is what we call security of tenure. So people, many people are worried about whether or not their lease is going to end, whether or not the rent is going to increase way above what they can afford. So with people, a lot of families, a lot of individuals who are hanging on to their homes and hanging on to their leases because they're trying to pay the increased rents, or they're worried about their landlord turning around and saying, do you know what, I need to terminate this tenancy because I'm either going to move into the place myself, or a family member is going to move in, or I'm going to sell the property, or I'm going to do a substantial renovation. Now, it could be that those three things are real, that the landlord is going to do that, but it's also our experience and the experience of, I'm sure, everyone around the table, that many tenants find themselves out of home. They find themselves homeless because a landlord has asserted one of these things, the sale, the substantial renovation, or a family member moving in, and then they find out a couple of months later that in fact that was a ruse. Yeah.
But there have been
rents.
Some measures though that have been put in place in recent times to try and give a little bit more protection to the renter, to prevent the landlord from being in a position to do that. And you know, the jury's out. Different political parties will give their view on whether or not those measures, the likes of the rent pressure zones, etc., are even working.
Yeah. Absolutely. There have been some substantial improvements in legislation, and the rent pressure zones is very much a step in the right direction. The issue is, and there was discussion in the last kind of 3 weeks about the fact that the rent pressure zones legislation is being flouted by a small number of landlords. But that small number of landlords is making huge impact, huge negative impact on the lives of families, of children, of individuals who find themselves in those various scenarios. And our role is to advise, is to assist renters across the country, and also to stave off and prevent homeless accommodation through our tenancy protection service. And that's the key. You know, the emergency accommodation and the provision of that is really important. Social housing is absolutely key. But helping people to stay in their homes in the rented sector through moderate rents and through provisions that improve the security of their leases. These are key supports that we provide, that others around the table provide, and that's absolutely key given our over-reliance in this country on the private rented sector to house many low-income households.
OK, we're going to continue on with this discussion in a few moments. You're listening to News Talks Between the Lines programme. We'll be back with more from our panel.
Between the Lines on News Talk.
OK, well, you're very welcome back to News Talks Between the Lines with myself, Andrea Gilligan. We're discussing the issue of homelessness across the country today. Joined in studio by our panel, Father Peter McFerry of the Peter McFerry Trust, also John Mark McCafferty, CEO of Threshold, and Mike Allen, Director of Advocacy at Focus Ireland. I just, Mike Allen, want to just return to yourself. It was a point actually that Paul Melia mentioned at the outset of the programme earlier today, and it was to do with the idea of trying to now address the problem, and we need to have a greater supply of properties available. He touched on the region of, we need nearly something like 50,000 odd units to try and alleviate this problem going forward, given, I suppose, the rate at which more and more people are becoming homeless or engaging with emergency accommodation. Why are we finding it so difficult to get these units developed?
It's very hard to get an answer to that. I think Paul gave a number of them. Most experts would say we need to be delivering 35,000 or more housing, new housing units every year for the next maybe decade at least. And that's really just keeping up with the way our population is going to grow. So every year in which we deliver fewer than 35,000, the underlying problem gets worse. So there are more households looking for fewer homes. That is inevitably going to lead to growing level of homelessness. Overall, the government has, while talking about having a greater moving away, the government talks about moving away from a reliance on the private rent, private sector, private development sector, the private rented sector. But in reality, all their policies that they're putting in place ultimately rely on the private sector or the for-profit sector in order to deliver what they're doing. And they've tried various different ways of reconfiguring either the buy-to-sell sector or the buy-to-let or the social housing, and none of them appear to be working. And people say that there's a lack of political will. It's a very tricky concept, that. I mean, I haven't seen a minister who hasn't wanted to solve this problem. The question really is who they are willing to take on and who they have the political authority to take on in order to deliver that. And so that's the failure, that they haven't taken on even state institutions like NAMA could be doing an awful lot more in delivering social housing. They haven't taken on the people who have been amassing large amounts of land, and they haven't taken on the people who have all these empty homes. All the responses have been carrot, 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 and there's never any sort of penalty for people who are hoarding empty housing or hoarding building land or waiting for profits.
Some measures have been put in place to try and address that, but I suppose it's the engagement of the local
authorities. All the measures have been to incentivize people to do good things. Nothing has been put in place to in any way penalize people for doing very bad things, very antisocial things. And in actual fact, there's an awful lot of international evidence that relatively wealthy people and very wealthy people react much more effectively if you threaten to tax their wealth rather than if you offer them a bit more wealth.
We'll enter into a whole other conversation today on that.
Well, that's the fundamental question, because what, you know, more and more carrots isn't working.
How much
a few more sticks are necessary.
Can I turn to you on that point, Father Peter McFerry? We need a greater supply of properties.
Oh, we absolutely do. I mean, this whole problem I would define in one sentence. In 1975, this country built 8,500 social houses. In 1985, this country built 6,900 social houses. And in 2015, this country built 75 social houses. And in 2016, this country built 248 social houses. The reality is that when people lose their accommodation for whatever reason, there is no social housing to move into. So the solution, we have to start building social housing.
Okay.
The minister has admitted that the state owns enough land to build 50,000 social and affordable housing. And then he goes on to say, but that's not the solution. it just baffles me.
Can I just wanted to look back at it, just a piece I was reading earlier this week. One in three long-term social homes provided by the state last year was delivered by housing associations. The Irish Council for Social Housing said it expects to deliver more than 15,000 of the 50,000 social units promised under the government's Rebuilding Ireland programme.
Well, the government's Rebuilding Ireland programme is way, way behind schedule in terms of building social housing. I think the local authorities don't want to build big social housing units anymore. I think maybe they were stung by housing developments like Talla and Ballymun, which created problems. But in my mind, it wasn't the social housing that created the problems. It was building social housing without any services that created. When they built Ballymun, for 16,000 people, they provided one swimming pool. For teenagers growing up in Ballymun, they had one swimming pool. Of course you're going to get problems if you don't provide the services.
And this comes back,
so I think we've
whole...
got to go back to building social housing on a massive scale. There is no other solution. The other alternative, I mean not alternative, but along with that, and Mike has hinted at it, there are thousands and thousands of empty houses and apartments in this country boarded up. It is absurd to have perfectly habitable houses and apartments empty while people are looking for houses and apartments to live in. I would compulsorily purchase a lot of them. And some of the local authorities are doing that. Louth County Council is leading the way in compulsorily purchasing. I would say to the owners of those, you use them or you lose them, and we're going to compulsorily purchase.
Okay.
We could solve this problem in a relatively short period of time if we started building social housing and if we started using the empty buildings that are already there.
Just on that point as well, John Mark McCafferty, that Father Peter McFerry mentioned there, that there's a lot of people that are probably in towns, rural areas across the country, looking at these, you know, Celtic Tiger estates that were built. There's now plenty of ghost estates still, derelict properties, as Father Peter McFerry touched on there, that aren't being used. For the people that you engage with on a daily basis, the contact threshold, Father Peter McFerry is making the point that all of these other empty units, they could be put to better use.
There's some capacity in the rural areas, but you've got to look at where the work is, and you've got to look at where families already are and individuals already are, where children are in school, where people create and sustain their communities. And the vast majority of people live in urban areas. They live in Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway. They live in the larger towns. And in those areas, you don't have so many of the ghost estates because we have the issue of demand far outstripping supply. And for our clients, they are renters. The vast majority are in the private rented sector. All they want to do is hold on to their home. They want to hold on to their home at the prospect of a rent increase. They want to hold on to their home when a landlord, or if a landlord is saying that their tenancy is going to end, they have a notice to quit, notice to termination. And that's why advice and a well-informed tenant population and tenancy protection and the promotion of that service is absolutely key. We provide a nationwide service to assist people to hold on to their tenancies, but a lot of people don't know about it. And it's incumbent on the state to promote all the kind of the services that are provided by both themselves, local authorities, central agencies and charities like ourselves. Because what's key to this is that people remain in their homes, that they don't make that kind of terribly traumatic transition into homelessness.
Okay. Can I just go back to you, Mike Allen, just on the point of that Father Peter McFerry mentioned he wants to CPO all of the derelict properties that are out there. Where are you in that?
Well, I think the example of Louth County Council is interesting, and I think that's to be welcomed. I certainly agree with Peter that there is an issue. Probably we are proposing a taxation on such empty units if you can't prove a good reason for them not to be used. It's the same sort of notion, so it's not a big difference there. I think two points I'd like to make. One is just in terms of what organisations like ourselves are doing. We are one of those approved housing bodies, so we are building property and we're buying property to move families and individuals out of homelessness. But the scale at which we're able to do it is very, very worthwhile and it makes a difference. But the scale of the problem we have needs much larger institutions, much larger capacity to build. And that's why we're so reliant on the local authorities. It's not an ideological position or a political position. It's the only bodies which have the scale to build at the scale we have. Other local authorities, and we know that because they used to do it in the past, and they are responsible for the great successes in the past we've
just
had about housing.
If you don't mind, Mike Allen, just outline for people just in terms of the work that Focus Ireland do in terms of, I suppose, gathering or making the availability, making some properties available to homeless people. Just outline for people what it is that the organisation does there.
Yeah, so that's one arm of one wing of the organisation, which is Focus Housing. We're a landlord. We have around 1,000 housing units across the country.
But you don't buy and sell. It's more of a rented.
We rent them out to people.
Yeah,
we rent them out to people as social housing on differential rent. Usually the allocations are with the local authorities, identifying people who also not only need a home but also need ongoing support. So there's a particular section. Some of those we build, and we're building at the moment in central Dublin. And in other places, we would work with developers or buy property that's on the market to build up the stock.
Yeah,
and
but you don't buy to sell, though. It's
no,
it's
no,
rental,
we're not. Okay. No, no, we are a social landlord. And support people who have additional
just
needs.
Give us an indication of how many people roughly you would be supporting in that way.
We have about it's almost 1,000 housing units across the country is what we have, which makes us one of the largest approved housing bodies in Ireland, which gives you an indication of, while approved housing bodies are extremely important, they're relatively small. So, you know, they aren't, you know, so that their contribution, the number of social houses they can deliver, is extremely important. But it's not possible to rely on them entirely to solve the problem. And that's why I think all the homeless and housing organisations are saying the government need to get the local authority sector up to its ability to overcome these resistance to building or whatever is there or the barriers that are to building. Mm. Because absolutely, as Peter says, we need to build on a scale that we used to do in the past. Tens and twenties isn't going to solve it. We need to build communities as well as housing. And I think that's where we'd be absolute agreement with Peter. It needs to be large scale housing, but not big swathes of housing, but communities that people want to live in, vibrant communities, people where they can actually make their homes.
Yeah, it's a livelihood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just can I just on that point as well, John Mark McCafferty, I suppose, are you, in layman's terms, do you engage with people, I suppose, before they go to Mike Allen? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I guess we're all about prevention and we work alongside Focus in terms of the policy work and the services work, but we're all about advising tenants and advocating on behalf of tenants. And where tenants have a situation where they need to go to, say, the Residential Tenancies Board because their tenancy is under threat, we will assist, we will support, and we will advocate on behalf of a number of those tenants in complex cases. But we're all about stemming the flow of people into homelessness. Mm. And we're all about a vibrant rented sector. So we want to see landlords investing in the sector, good landlords investing in the sector, supply of the private rented housing, because it's not just about a lack of social housing. It's also about an overall lack in terms of the private rented supply. And that is being kind of eaten into by the likes of these short lets, these corporate lets. While we're seeing a good increase in the amount of student accommodation, that's for a particular market, a very, very kind of high-end, high-income market. And so the pressure in the private rented sector in terms of available houses to let today, tomorrow, is very, very small. And so what we're looking for is not only increased social housing output, but also the provision and the development of affordable rental.
Yeah, we're back to that same, I suppose, answer to the question again, aren't we really, Father Peter McFerry? We, as John Mark McCafferty mentioned there, we're back to the idea of having to supply more properties. And
we are, but and Threshold have done a great job in preventing thousands of people becoming homeless by advising them. But we've got to go beyond advising them. We have a crisis. We have an emergency, and I would be advocating that for 3 years to get through this emergency, it should be illegal for landlords, our banks, our vulture funds to evict people onto the street. They should be prohibited because this is an emergency. We need emergency action. Emergency action is action you wouldn't normally take in the normal course of events. But when you have an emergency, you have to take emergency action. And that would be one of the things that would make a huge difference. What's happening today is the number of people who are being evicted from the private rented sector into homelessness is greater than the number of homeless people the local authorities are able to house. And so the numbers are going up and up. And we've got to stem that flow into homelessness. And we're not going to stem it adequately by advising people, because there are, as John says, there are a lot of rogue landlords out there who are way ahead of the department. The department is trying to catch up with the rogue landlords, but the rogue landlords are outwitting the department at every turn.
Okay, and just on that particular point as well, I'm sure there'll be some maybe opposition to that proposal, but do you think that might work over a 3 year period?
Well, I think I'm saying that we have an emergency. Let's do this for 3 years. Let's try and get through this emergency and then review it again after 3 years. Unfortunately, that's not likely to pass the Dáil, as 25% of the TDs are themselves landlords.
Okay. Well, you're listening to News Talks Between the Lines program. We'll be back with more from our panel in just a moment.
Between the Lines on News Talk.
Okay, well, you're very welcome back to this morning's Between the Lines programme with myself, Andrea Gilligan. We're discussing the issue of homelessness right across the country. We're joined in studio by our panel today, Mike Allen, Director of Advocacy at Focus Ireland, John Mark McCafferty, the CEO of Threshold, and also Father Peter McFerry of the Peter McFerry Trust. Just some of the other issues maybe that we haven't focused on in great detail this morning. The fact that how do people end up becoming homelessness? Mike Allen, I suppose there's a whole host of or a whole variety of different reasons for that, but is there any way we could have earlier intervention to try and stop this? Obviously the likes of Threshold, that's part of the work they're doing, but on the emotional and the psychological In that area, is there anything further that can be done?
Yes, there's definitely an awful lot needs to be done to prevent homelessness and intervene earlier on. And as John Mark has said, Focus Ireland are also very much involved in helping to prevent homelessness, and we work in partnership often with Threshold in doing that. What Focus Ireland, one of the main things we're doing in responding to homelessness, we are the what's called a Family Homeless Action Team for Dublin. So we provide the case management support on behalf of the Dublin Regional Homeless Executive to most of the families that are homeless in Dublin. And over the last number of years, we've done a piece of work which is to phone up all the families that become homeless in particular months and ask them what happened to them and how they became homeless. Nobody else is doing this research, and we're doing it from money that we directly fundraise. The state won't fund us to do this really important research. And we ask people, if you ask people, where were you last? You find out that quite a lot of them would say, well, I was living with my family, or I was living with my sister or my mother and so on. But if you ask them, well, where were you before that? You find out that they had their own private rented accommodation. So, and they lost that for one reason or another. I'll go into that in a second. And rather than enter homeless services, they go and live with wider family and friends for a period of time. It's exactly the opposite of the sort of myth that certain people are trying to put around, that people are deliberately making themselves homeless. The reality is most families who become homeless do everything they can to avoid ending up in a hub or a B&B. They stay with families and friends. Eventually that breaks down and they end up in homeless services. So if you go back to where they were in the private rented sector and why they lost that accommodation, the single biggest reason why families are being made homeless is because, again, as John Mark has said, and Threshold and Peter McVeary Trust know this as well, that landlords say they're selling up, landlords say they're moving family or friends in, or they're increasingly saying they're doing renovations. All those are legal reasons to break a tenancy agreement and evict a household, or in this case, a family. We are saying in Focus Ireland that a very easy solution to that would be to change the legislation, and so that buy-to-let landlords, a landlord who knowingly raised a mortgage from a bank or a lending institution in order to rent out to somebody else, should not be allowed to evict on the basis of selling or moving their family.
Yeah, and there's a point, but we were actually just discussing that earlier. Can I just ask you as well, Mike Allen, just in your own view, what would your message be to the government, just if they were listening this morning, they're going to heed your call, how do we solve this?
Well, I mean, there isn't one solution. There are a whole range of things that need to do more energetically. We've talked about the building side, and I think that's all covered. I'm not sure what your response there to the proposal about the legislation. That is a doable response. We have got senior counsel opinion that it's not in breach of the Constitution. If a lender and a landlord enter into an agreement to borrow money to buy a house to provide a home for somebody, that's their intention. And there's a specific lending instrument which you can borrow money to be a buy-to-let landlord. There are obligations that go on that. And there are certain obviously obligations that go on that during a crisis, as Peter is saying. That would be the single easiest thing that the government could do. It is less radical than Peter's proposal of ending all evictions, but it specifically narrows into the place where the single largest cause of homelessness and would stop immediately.
Can I just bring you just to respond to that, Father Peter McVeary?
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree with that. I would go further because there are, as you say, a lot of rogue landlords out there who don't give a damn about the law and who don't give a damn about their tenants, and they're just interested in maximising money. I think to control them, I think we need further legislation to prevent them evicting.
I suppose if you can't get the really practical, well-designed, targeted measure through the door, you've little hope of getting the more radical measure through the door,
I
suppose.
If the voluntary bodies like ourselves and the others who aren't here were to sit around a table for 15 minutes, I think we could tell the minister how to solve this problem in 15 minutes.
Okay,
because I think we would all be agreed on it. Build social housing, use the empty buildings that are around, that blight every city and town in this country, prevent landlords, particularly rogue landlords, from evicting people into homelessness, prevent the banks from evicting people into homelessness when they repossess the houses. I think we could come up with six solutions very, very quickly, give them to the minister, but they're all radical. And ultimately, as Mike says, the minister has to decide, is he on the side of the banks the vulture funds and the property owners? Or is he on the side of tenants who are struggling and people who are finding it difficult to pay the mortgage?
Okay, but I suppose if he was here today, we know the answer that he'd give. Can I just maybe finally come to you, John Mark McCafferty from Threshold? For anyone listening this morning that maybe is on the cusp of losing their home, finding it difficult, need help, need support, just from an advisory perspective, how do people engage with you, I suppose, even from an anonymity perspective? Like, just what advice do you have for people?
We provide free, independent advice on 1800 454 454. And we also provide tenancy protection services. We work to assist people and families to hold on to their homes. And we don't just provide advice, we advocate on behalf of tenants in order to save their homes. We also advocate for change in policy. So we're looking for things like a deposit protection scheme, an end to certain evictions on the basis of no reason, which you can still do in the law, greater enforcement in terms of the rent pressure zones, and a more detailed rent register so that people know exactly what the cost of the rent of particular properties are. But I have to reiterate, we are the National Tenancy Protection Service for the country. And that 1800 454 454 number gives people access to advisors 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Friday. And those advisors will assist, inform and advocate on behalf of those tenants in relation to whatever problem or query or crisis that they may face.
Okay. I'm afraid that's all we have time for this morning, folks. My thanks to our panel today, Father Peter McFerry of the Peter McFerry Trust, John Mark McCafferty, the CEO of Threshold, Mike Allen, Director of Advocacy at Focus Ireland, and also Paul Media from the Irish Independent a little earlier on. Our production team today, Aidan McKelvey and Stephen Jordan. I'll be back next Sunday again from 8 a.m. But for me, Andrea Gilligan, have a great day.
Between the Lines with Andrea Gilligan. This is News Talk.